All right, welcome back to the pregame show. Bill Lasky in for Marty Lurie, as Marty's taking a little time off today. And in for him for a little bit, and I'm joined by a good friend of mine. You hear him in the morning show with Murph and Mac. Let's bring in Adam Copeland this morning. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing good, Bill. Good to be on with you again, man. Yesterday was
always good talking to you, my friend.
Yeah, you too, man. Yesterday was a pretty good ball game, I thought. So
we kind of turned it around with our early runs and good pitching, and I want to get your intake on what happened yesterday with those early runs, getting off with Dickerson, Longoria, and Belt in that first inning. It was a nice first inning to get some early runs for Cahill.
Yeah, I thought they did. I mean, pretty much exactly what we had discussed yesterday, which was trying to jump on him early, on Luke Weaver early. Cause he's a guy who, and he does have swing and miss stuff. I think all of his six strikeouts yesterday came on swinging third strikes. So he's a guy who had kind of a weird pitching line where he threw 70 pitches, gave up eight hits, he gave up all four of those runs. But, the Giants found the gaps, and Brandon Belt is staying hot. Evan Longoria is staying hot. Dickerson, as you said, got it going yesterday a little bit, which is good to see considering Mike Yastrzemski just maybe hasn't been quite as hot as of late, despite hitting a double himself yesterday.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on Yaz. He had four strikeouts. A couple of them were question marks. You could see his nonverbals to the umpire third, umpire behind home plate. Those things are going to happen as a young player. You're going to get the calls on the veteran players more than the rookie players. And Yaz is just going to have to understand that. Where on the other side, Brandon Belt took two really good walks, and we both know that he's got an eye for strike zone. I like seeing a lineup with Longoria third and Belt fourth. What do you feel about those two guys implementing into that lineup?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the season, and yesterday when we were talking with Mark Sanchez, he mentioned Joe McCarthy, who I had just kind of forgotten about, was the opening day right fielder, right? Because Belt and Longoria weren't out there, and the lineup was lengthened, I think, a ton by having those two guys back in there, and they're playing almost every day. And today, the guy they're facing, Taylor Clark, I think Belt's the only guy in the lineup that they has hit a home run off of him. But the Longoria thing, I think, is interesting because this is – I think he's third season now, right? This is third season in San Francisco, which has really only been his third season in the National League. And coming from the American League East, I remember his first season, he said that where – he's facing guys he had never even seen before, where he was trying to get accustomed to learning new pitchers and learning a new division. And I think his comfort level, you saw it last year, is much better now. It's much different than it was when he got here. And I think we're starting to see the fruits of that starting to blossom now, where he's comfortable. He's in a lineup that is sort of put him in a position where he doesn't have to be the number one guy or the anchor, but he's still got that big gap-to-gap power. This is a guy who's probably going to get Hall of Fame votes at some point. I don't know that he'll get in, but 300 career home runs, he's capable of putting up some more big numbers, I think, for the remainder of his career. And I think it's real good having him in the lineup right now to complement Brandon Belt.
You know, Evan Longoria was a huge name in Tampa Bay. I mean, when you talked about Tampa Bay, the first name that came out of your mouth was Longoria. He made the city. Mm-hmm. He was a big-time star. And I agree with you, coming over to the National League, new pitchers, new fields, everything's changed, a new club, and you're trying to get your identity. And here it is, you know, like you say, 3 years back, I think he's in better shape. He looks better, feeling the ball quicker and making his great throws as a Gold Glove winner would. But I just like his whip. He just seems to swing the bat a little quicker. The whip with the bat, it's quicker to the ball. And I just think he's having one of the best years I've seen him in a Giants uniform.
Well, yeah, and I think we sort of fall victim to thinking that everybody who's a power hitter should be hitting home runs, right? And while he's capable of hitting 20 a year, he hit it last year, he hit 20. I think he's hit 30 in his career a couple of times. But 2 years ago when he first got here, I think we forget that he got hit in the hand with a pitch in Miami and missed, like, I think he missed 4 weeks or missed 6 weeks or something. And he hit 18 or 19 home runs, and he was just short of that 20 home run mark. So this is a guy with good power who the approach for him right now in the lineup, as you said, the pressure's been taken off of him, right? He was looked at as a middle-of-the-order guy. He doesn't have to be the MVP candidate or the face of the franchise. He can just kind of go do his thing, and I think he's a model of consistency, and you feel good. He's one of those guys where a ball is hit to third base, too, and you mentioned the Gold Glove. You turn your head because you know it's going to be fine, right? You know, he's taking care of it. So when he and Crawford are on that left side, it feels good, right? You feel safe with those guys, at least defensively, in there, and I think we're really starting to see Longoria get comfortable with his position in the lineup at the plate.
You know, the other thing, too, Adam, with Longoria, they try to put that shift on him, and I love how he just tries to push the ball to right field. He had two doubles yesterday, one to left center, one to right center, and I think he's starting to see where these shifts are just kind of pushing him over to be a pull hitter, and if he can go inside out or if he can take a slider away, he's going to take that opportunity to go to right field.
You know what's funny about that, Bill, is like I remember Jeremy Affeldt a few years ago had said that where, you know, they put the shift on behind a pitcher, but he doesn't necessarily change his approach with how he's attacking the hitter. I've never understood why you would play a guy to pull and then pitch him away, right, especially with a guy like Longoria.
Hey, I've been questioning that ever since the shift's been coming out, Adam. I don't understand it. I always say, does the pitcher know the shift is on because I'm throwing it the wrong way?
Well, and the thing I think that we should point out is exactly what we're talking about with Longoria's approach. And we saw this with Yastrzemski over the last couple of weeks when he was real hot. When good hitters are going, they're using the entire field, right? They're finding the ball in their tunnel, and they're putting their barrel on the ball. And I think that's what we talked about yesterday, where these guys are really just kind of waiting for their pitch in their zone. But when good hitters get going, they're going with pitches. They're not taking things away out of their swing. They're staying on the swing. They're staying on the pitch, and they're trying to take what the pitcher is giving them. And Longoria is doing that with Brandon Belt, maybe better than anybody in the lineup right now.
All right, Adam, stay right there. We're going to take a quick break here on the pregame show. Bill Lasky in for Marty Lurie. Adam Copeland will be right back with me as we take a quick break on KNBR, the sports leader. All right, welcome back to the pregame show. Adam Copeland on with Bill Lasky filling in for Marty Lurie. Adam, we went through the offensive side. Let's talk a little bit about that bullpen, what we saw yesterday. Garcia, Coonrod, Gott, Watson, and Rogers. And particularly I want to talk about Garcia. Garcia's kind of been the quiet lefty that's kind of joined in a bullpen and really has put some good numbers. What do you think about Jarlin Garcia?
It's funny. He's the guy I was going to say. You mentioned those names. The two guys that stand out for me were he and Sam Coonrod yesterday. I really liked him. He's been kind of a late-inning left-handed asset for them. I know yesterday they used him a little bit earlier. He came in and he just sort of finished off that walk after Trevor Cahill had fallen behind 3-0. But I really like him. I think he's putting together competitive outings almost every time out. They've been using Wandy Peralta, I think, in the earlier innings, sort of those bridge innings. And I think they would have used him had they not used him 2 days ago yesterday. But I really like Harlan. I think right now he's throwing the ball pretty well. He came over from Florida, I think, or Miami was where he was before.
Exactly.
But I think right now they're still kind of figuring out the bullpen. And I know Kapler said that yesterday where they're kind of, I think he used the word explore. That's a good Kapler line there. They're exploring
of course
what
it
their
is.
Options are. Yeah. that's kind of his, that's right in his vernacular, man, right?
It's an experiment. No, that's another one.
Experiment. We're exploring. They're having conversations. They're
come on, Adam. You know where we'll go with that.
I know what's going on, and it seems like they're finding some assets, though. You know, you got to throw, especially with young bullpen arms with no track records throwing big innings, which is what they're looking for this year. They're experimenting. They're trying to figure out where their next core of guys is. And I think back kind of to before the Giants had the World Series run, they did sort of the same thing. And Bruce Bochy had to go through the young guys to find Sergio Romo. They used to have a guy, Osiris Matos and Danny Santana, and then they brought in a veteran guy like Guillermo Mota, but they were sifting through a lot of young, remember the left-hander Alex Hinshaw and Jack Cashner? And
boy, you're bringing some names.
Guys.
You're bringing some heat to me today. Those are great names.
Well, they had to figure these guys out, and they had to figure out where their roles would be, and I think that's what the Giants are going through now. And a guy like Sam Coonrod, he's got stuff where, I mean, he's electric. He's fun to watch pretty much every time he's out there because he's filling up the strike zone with incredible stuff right now, and he's got a fastball that touches triple digits. So I think there's reason to be excited about some of these guys. I just don't know yet where their roles sort of polish out, right, like where they're going to land in that bullpen.
Adam Copeland joining me today. Bill Lasky filling in for Marty Lurie. One of the things that I did, and you know this, I filled in the last couple of years at the River Cats doing TV there, and I had a good chance to talk to Sam Coonrod when he came up, and he just came to me, can I do it? Do you think I can pitch in the big leagues? And I thought, sure, you got electric stuff. And his biggest outcome was his confidence. He didn't have the built-in confidence of, hey, I'm at AAA, can I go one more level up? And I think that's what I'm kind of hearing with Kapler saying, hey, he's got electric stuff. He doesn't have to pitch to the corners. He just has to throw a strike. And yesterday, throwing 101 with a cutter around 96, and he dropped a changeup in to get out of the inning. Those are the innings that build confidence, and you and I both have seen this out of him. But it's the consistency. It's the repetition that he has to do. Don't you agree to that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's kind of what we were talking about with Trevor Gott even, right, yesterday, trying to build his confidence back up in innings that aren't as high stress. And actually, they put him in a spot yesterday where he had to get some outs, right, and had to kind of help protect the lead yesterday. So I thought that was a value. But back to Coonrod, it's funny you mentioned, like, the confidence thing. We talked to him in Scottsdale before they shut down spring training when we were out there in February or early March. And he was talking to us about how he's from a little podunk town in Illinois where there's like one traffic light or something. And
those
his older brother, he said his older brother was like the county icon, was like this flame throwing huge pitcher and was supposed to be this guy. And it turned out that Sam ended up being the better player. And now he's the guy in the big league. So it's funny. I wonder where that confidence stuff comes back to. Just always thinking I'm in my big brother's shadow maybe, and I won't be the guy to make it. But now here he is, and he's got the stuff to succeed. But as you said, Gabe Kapler said his stuff is maybe better than he thinks it is. He doesn't have to paint. He doesn't have to get cute and nibble on the corners. He can come right at guys. As long as he's throwing strikes, he can be dangerous.
And, you know, Adam, that's some of the things that happen in a 60-game season where you're really pushing a lot of these guys through the minor leagues where they're not learning themselves and learning stressful situations. And that's one guy that went right from A-ball to Triple-A, and next thing you know, he was in the big leagues and he got injured. And, you know, those are the things that we don't understand. Now, I do as a pitcher that went through the minor leagues, the learning stages, but these guys have pushed themselves so fast. And then they want results, and I think the mental side of it really is the negative when it gets to these young guys. You look at Tyler Rogers. Here's a guy that was a three-time PCL All-Star, and now he's your closer on a big league team. So these guys are rushed through a lot of things, and I really believe the mental side of the game is something they need to sit back and kind of learn from the veterans.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth in that, like, I think that we overlook the mental aspect of pro athletes in general. Like, it's hard for me to put myself in that mindset or to figure out what a guy's going through because I've never played at that high of a level, right? It's hard to you just mentioned, like, Tyler Rogers, for example. He was an All-Star three times and was never given a shot at the big. So at what point does that start to hit his confidence where he says, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing everything that is asked of me. I'm putting up numbers. I'm making All-Star appearances. And then maybe you get a nod. Like, we mentioned Chris Shaw yesterday. Here's a guy with 75 or 72 big league plate appearances. He was a first-round draft pick. You got to wonder about his confidence and guys like that where they maybe get the cup of coffee and then never get another opportunity because you're constantly trying to play matchups and manage success at the big league level while developing young talent. And when you've got a huge pool of young talent, it's hard to sort of figure out how much time you give a guy in a lineup day to day or how many innings do you give a guy here. And I think all of that comes back to the mental fatigue that goes into baseball. And it's why in a 60-game season, it's much different than the six-month slog, right? You've got to have these. That's why I think, like, clubhouse guys like Hunter Pence are so much more important in baseball than in other sports because you're together every single day for such a long period of time, and that mental fatigue has got to take a toll on guys. You know better than anybody, Bill. Like, again, that's something I can't even really speak to, but you know how that works.
Yeah, you know, and another thing, what was great, and I really enjoyed going to the Rivercats and going in the locker room and letting me talk to so many different players and pitchers. And one of the stories I told Tyler Rogers, and he'll probably remember it to this day, is when I was in Double-A with the Kansas City Royals, we had Dan Quisenberry there, and he was in the same shoes as Tyler Rogers where he could not get a shot in the big leagues. And he was the side armor. He kind of came right underneath the belt, you know, the side winger. And I remember John Schuerholz and Dick Balderson, the two GMs, the big, you know, Hall of Famers, come down, and he was thrown in a bullpen, and we're in Jacksonville, Florida. And here's, I'm a young kid going, wow, look at, here's the brass coming to watch this guy. And I could literally hear Dick Balder saying, he's not going to get anybody out in the big leagues. There's no way that stuff's going to be, you know, good. And John Schuerholz just said, nope, I don't have a chance. And sure enough, they gave him a chance the next year in spring training, and look where he is. He passed away, one of the greatest friends of mine, and he's in the ring of circle with the Kansas City Royals. And this is similar like Tyler Rogers, because when Sabian was there, Tyler Rogers was, like you said, an all-star, but not an opportunity. And sure, Farhan came in and Gabe Kapler came in, and they see this guy throwing strikes, and that's what he did yesterday. He threw seven pitches to get the save. He didn't throw one ball over 83 miles an hour. But it's that heart of the lion, Adam, and you know it as well as I do. When you give that little bit of opportunity, you open that door just a little bit, and guess what? Some of these guys are going to take it and run with it, and I think that's Tyler Rogers to the T.
Well, and that's the other thing I think about is so many of these guys, and maybe Tyler Rogers isn't necessarily one of them because he's such a different thrower. But I wonder about, you know, you look at certain guys getting to the big league level with a pool of talent or you know, they come with a certain asset that they can bring to the table. And I think a lot of these guys were the best ever wherever they came from. You know, we talk about Sam Coonrod coming out of a little town. A lot of these guys are the best guy in their league or in their county or in their city or in their state. And everybody thinks they're going to be the one, and then they make it. And they're in the minor league system, and they're asked to achieve greatness while they're up against some of the other greatest talented players across the league, right, or across the country or across the globe. So a guy like Tyler Rogers to finally get this opportunity and seize the opportunity, and I'll be honest, I thought even at the beginning of this year they were maybe using him a little too much.
Didn't seem
like he was having great success. And I was joking with Marty. I said, what does Tyler Rogers have on Gabe Kapler? He's in there, like almost every day. He's pitching every day. But now they call him the Swiss Army knife, and he's the guy. You put him in for seven pitches or a save situation or you need to get out with a guy on base, and he makes it happen. So I'm pretty confident now when they give him the ball.
You know, and I like his role because he has been a closer for so many years in Sacramento, and then they try to use him in middle relief. They were trying to use him in every which way in Sacramento just to give another flavor to the Giants to say, hey, he doesn't have to be a closer. He can be your bridge man. He can be your setup man. And I think right now, last night was really the first day, a first game where he has got his second save, where now he might be that closer, and there's really nobody else besides Trevor Gott who had the opportunity that's getting that. Of course, Tony Watson hasn't really been the ninth inning guy. He's pretty much been a staple in the eighth inning. Do you feel that they will trade Tony Watson? That's going to be the big question today because so many teams need a left-handed bullpen arm.
I kind of think they will. I get more of a feeling now than I did yesterday that they will. And also because, like, I've been following a lot of the trade rumors that have happened now over the last day or so. I saw, you know, Mitch Moreland was traded.
Now
they're flying today, and there's rumors now, and I don't know if anything's happened since we started talking, but that Josh Hader could be moved. And, I mean, God forbid the Dodgers stepped up with Josh
Hader. Unbelievable. I saw that, too.
Apparently they're in on him, yeah.
Well, but Clevenger, too. You know, Clevenger from the Indians now. They're talking to Dodgers, and the Dodgers do need starting pitching again. Boy, oh boy, when the big hitters hit, boy, they're going after some big names if they get both of those guys. But then again, when you look at the Dodger organization, their minor leagues are stacked, so they do have some players that they can play with. But it is going to be an interesting day.
The Giants are trying to replicate,
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting day. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think so. Sorry, just back to the Josh Hader Watson thing. I just sort of feel like every year in around trade deadline time, there are teams that are looking for like a starter or an ace or a left-handed bullpen arm. And there are kind of tiers of guys, right, that you can go and grab. And if Josh Hader maybe goes to the highest bidder, maybe somebody flies in and says, hey, we still need that left-handed late inning help. A guy who's had some experience finishing off ball games, and Tony Watson could be that guy. So maybe the Giants end up trading him to the second suitor, you know, the person or the team that doesn't end up with Hader. But you're right. It sounds all of a sudden like there's some big names out there. The White Sox might be in on Clevenger too. Should be interesting in division for the Indians, but it seems now like there may be more trades than I had anticipated, even as recently as yesterday.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to get going today, and with the Giants off tomorrow, we just don't know what Farhan's doing and Harris is doing. Scott, and I'm reading them right with you. Lance Lynn, Rangers are discussing a Joey Gallo type trade. Boy, Joey Gallo, put him in the outfield somewhere. My goodness, I was so impressed with him when the Rangers came here. I really didn't know he was that great of an outfielder, and he's pretty damn good, and now his swing is so pure. And Lance Lynn, of course, he's been the utmost surprise for the Rangers as a starting pitcher, but he's been lights out. And if you're going to do two guys and pick both of those guys off the Rangers, you better get a lot in back in return.
Well, Joey Gallo is kind of that prototype of what baseball has become. And I remember when he got to the league maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and I think he's still pretty young. I think he's still like 25 or 26 years old. They had he and Nomar Mazara, and they traded Mazara over the offseason to Chicago. But he was supposed to be this big 30 home run a year stud. Kind of the same guy, both of those guys, good outfield arms. He's got an excellent arm as Joey Gallo, but they strike out a ton.
Yes.
But nobody cares. Nobody cares that he strikes out 200 times.
That's normal.
He's going to hit 45 home runs for you probably. So, and he's a guy, they play him at first base a little bit, but you're right. He's an excellent outfielder. He can play all three outfield positions. And you're right, it was fun watching him kind of, I mean, it's not fun making Oracle Park look small, because I remember they came either last year or 2 years ago, and he was ripping the ball at Oracle. So he's a fun left-handed bat. Teams like that, I don't know what they're thinking. You've got a guy who can hit the middle of the lineup, You've got team control on him. You've still got a Rougned Odor. You can bring in some pieces. I don't know why Texas would be looking to sort of move it unless you'd end up with a haul of prospects. But I don't know who's doing that right now. You know, I don't know who's making that trade.
Well, maybe you and I will go over to the Rangers and become the general manager and assistant general manager. We'll turn that Ranger organization around, Adam.
That's it.
Because
we'll move things. Yeah,
man, I tell you what, that stadium is so beautiful. I would love to go and see it, but we're going to see this possibly happen when they put the bubble on it, and if they're going to push it forward with Houston and Texas having a National League, which I don't understand, and then the American League is going to go to L.A. and San Diego. What do you think about that in trying to keep everything under control? And, of course, you know as well as I do the news coming out with the Oakland A's today having one positive, and now they're quarantined in Houston. What do you think of the idea of the bubble?
I think it's probably the smart way to do it. They said they couldn't do it, and they had talked about it, I guess, for the regular season, right? But one thing to keep in mind is that the leagues that have done the bubbles have been wildly successful, right? The NBA hasn't had a positive test inside the bubble. I think the NHL has got a couple of different bubble sites right now, an East Coast and a West Coast one for the Stanley Cup playoffs. They haven't had positive tests in like 15 or 20 rounds of testing everybody. The MLS did it. Now they're back to traveling, but they did their little tournament down in Florida at Walt Disney World also, and they didn't have any positive tests. So I think when we get to the postseason, and we've expanded it now at 16 teams, if you want the World Series to have any kind of competitive integrity and you want the balance of power to stay, if you want this championship to hold any kind of weight, and really that's up for fans to decide whether or not it's a legitimate championship or not, I guess it kind of depends on who wins it. If the Dodgers win it, I think we'll scoff at it and we'll say, oh, really, you got that 60-game championship. That's kind of cute. But if the Yankees win it, they're like, yeah, throw it on the pile. Add it to the 26 or 27 we've already got, right? So it just sort of depends. But I think in terms of keeping the game safe and making sure that players can play and the best players can play at the biggest stage for a world championship, you've got to make sure that you can't have any positive tests. And I think the only way to guarantee that is to do the bubble. So I think it's probably a good idea to do that for the postseason.
Yeah, so do I. And you know, we heard Gausman say that after his last start. And, you know, he said so much good things about the San Francisco Giants. And one of the things they said, he just feels so safe here. And all the testings that they do and the circle of teammates and staff are always there. And that's what one of the concerns you would have. And I would think that would be the same thing if you and I got traded. And your concern is the new team you're going to and what do they do and how they protect their players. And it's rightfully so. I mean, you're not going to be moving your families because you're just moving from a hotel to another hotel. Most of these teams are doing. But I would have to say the bubble is something that I think Major League Baseball is going to do. It's not been advocated yet where it's going to be 100%. But I'm right there with you. I think that would stop a lot of things and pursue the playoffs like they should run.
Well, I just can't imagine, you know, we're talking about the A's, and the other thing that we have to take into account here, too, is it's not just players. Like, the A's are saying it could be part of their traveling party, and, you know, teams don't want to release medical information, and you shouldn't unless you get the permission from that person. I wonder about travel happening like that in a postseason where, an attendant for the team has it, and now your team can't play, or a player catches it, and now, you know, I don't know, an ace for a staff can't pitch because you've got somebody on the team that's got COVID. And so the only way to keep that safe, and like I said, to keep the competitive balance, it just makes sense. And you've got time to figure it out. I mean, the NBA, the problem with the NBA doing it is they lost so much money, and these leagues now claim to be hemorrhaging money anyway because of the system they've had to go to due to COVID and the pandemic. I just feel like in order to keep the game safe and to make sure you're getting the most fair level of competition, you should probably do a bubble. But it is funny, though, that you're talking American League teams to the National League parks.
That's really strange.
Sorry, yeah.
We're speaking to Adam Copeland on the pregame show. Bill Lasky in for Marty Lurie. Let's talk about the game today, Adam. We got Johnny Cueto against Taylor Clark. Taylor Clark getting his second start on the year, more of a reliever. I think it's pretty much concerns on the Diamondback side. Could be a bullpen game. We don't know how far Taylor Clark will come, but let me give you the thoughts about Johnny Cueto. Not really a great start against the Dodgers last time out, but again, he's been pitching pretty well pretty much of the seasons. Had some bad luck with some dink hits here and a dink hit there and misplayed ball, but give me your thoughts on Johnny Cueto going against the D-backs today.
Yeah, he had a tough outing against the Dodgers. I think he gave up two doubles, back-to-back doubles in that first inning, and I think he was almost out of the inning, and then he gave up that shot to Max Muncy, who kind of turned around and got one on him. Johnny Cueto's Johnny Cueto. He's capable of coming out and shutting a team down for 7 to 8 to 9 innings almost every time just because of his deception. I'm really, really curious to see how the switch back to Chadwick Tromp is going to affect him, if that just makes him more comfortable. And I was actually going to ask you this yesterday. We didn't get a chance to get into it, but did you have guys you were more comfortable throwing to?
Totally.
And I know that's a total
100%. 100%.
Yeah, because you can bounce a ball. You know this guy's on the same page as you. You hit a rhythm. And, you know, we used to see it with Tim Lincecum and Hector Sanchez.
Yeah.
You've seen it for a number of years. Guys have their catchers or guys that they like to throw to. So if that's a mental thing, and we can't, we were just talking a ton about it. You can't understate or overstate, I guess, how much the mental element comes into this. And with Johnny Cueto's deception, being comfortable with the catcher is a factor. And the fact that Joey Bart has been struggling at the plate, I'm comfortable with Chadwick in there today.
Yeah, so do I. And I think we talked a little bit about it yesterday when you saw Bart in there and we were looking at Trump being the catcher for Cueto. And there's also the language batter, you know, talking Spanish. You can talk a little bit, yeah, get calm them down. And those are all things that you have to look at. And you talk about the mental side. I also talk about the physical side of getting the low pitch. You always see him crouching down like Sanguin and Pena. We talk about that, getting the low pitch. And that's what I like about it. I love, of course, I was a sinker slider pitcher. Pitch or anything by the knees I wanted. But again, Johnny Cueto lives down there. He doesn't really throw that high velocity pitch that escalates over the hands. And I love his movements, and he throws a nice tight slider. So I think this is a good move. Again, if it works, are we going to see it every time Cueto goes out there?
Well, I think the fact that you can have a designated hitter now certainly gives you the option if Joey Bart gets right. I mean, obviously, he struggled over the last week or so. But if he starts hitting again and you feel like his bat needs to be in the lineup, I think that because you've got the DH now, we could absolutely see this. And if it's one time through the lineup and if it's just Johnny Cueto, you can still get the development the other 4 days out of Joey Bart. I'm not too concerned about it. It's so early. We just want to see him getting the reps, I think, in real live game action. So I'm comfortable with this.
Well, we got to look for early runs again, Adam. I think that's going to play a huge part in this game, especially if you can get to Taylor Clark and get into that bullpen again. They used five relievers yesterday. So if that can happen, we can get some early runs and kind of get a laugher here. I'd like to see Johnny Cueto have a few runs to kind of lengthen them to 6, 7, maybe even 8 innings. Who knows with Johnny Cueto? And, you know, quick innings by him on the defensive side would help. But are you looking for the same similar outcome as yesterday?
Yeah, and I think where it gets tricky is what you talked about. It's probably going to be a bullpen game. Taylor Clark is likely to probably just go 3 innings, maybe 3 and change. I don't think you'll see him go through the lineup a second time, really. He's not much of a starting pitcher, kind of a bulk middle innings guy. But, yeah, he's been effective. He doesn't allow guys on base, and so that's why I think guys probably aren't going to get a second look at him. They'll probably get the one opportunity. It's just his second start of the season, so – yeah, jump on him early and then get to the bullpen. And sometimes it gets funky when you see 5 or 6 different guys. But if you put up the runs early, it makes it much simpler later in the game for you.
And especially when the Diamondbacks only have right-handers in the bullpen. That's what I don't understand. So, you know, that's another one Torey Lovello has to figure out. It's not on us. So we'll go to the Rangers again, Adam, so I'll make that call for us. But, again, thanks again, my friend. Thanks again. It's always great talking to you, and it's always good hearing your voice. And have a great day, my friend. Thanks for your time.
You too, Bill. We'll catch up soon. You're doing a great job this weekend, man. Love hearing you.
All right, thanks, Adam. That's Adam Copeland, and you can hear him every morning on the Murph and Mac Show right here on KNBR. And we're going to be right back on the pregame show. Bill Lasky filling in for Marty Lurie as we continue on the pregame show talking baseball. We'll be right back on KNBR, the sports leader.